mic. No, this mic is not for this. This mic is for Sue, right, Sue?
Yes, it records.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Now, I'll tell you why you're here. In case you're in the wrong room, you have 5 minutes to leave. This is our usual November.
Yes,
it is November 18th. Guess what?
Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Sally. Happy birthday to you.
Real quick, we'll start with a story. Last year, my colleague, who's tomorrow, the 19th, Scott Phillips, he was new to our group, and I got him a balloon. So now turn it down, it'll be a fun.
We had a much smaller audience last year.
And it's not something I want to keep advertising anymore.
Well, you didn't say your age, so don't.
Well, this is one cheering this group. The Sussex County Committee on Aging and Persons with Physical Disabilities is the one place where my age goes up. That's a good thing. I want to thank my friend here, Doris. Doris, I can never pronounce your last name.
Steinbrenner.
Doris is the Executive Director of Heritage. Senior Living, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And she has been a good friend of this committee, and she was very involved with our conference that we had in October, and we want to move around our committee rather than staying in Georgetown. So Doris is hosting us this time. Thank you very much. And what we'll do is, after we adjourn the meeting, Doris will be available to take us on tour, and please do. It's absolutely magnificent. You really, really enjoy seeing it.
And so I just wanted to add for housekeeping, the ladies and men's room are out that door to the right. Okay?
And thank you for the coffee.
And please help goodies. Yourself.
And goodies, too. Mm-hmm. Now, we don't have this in Georgetown. don't let that keep you away. We are fairly formal. Those of you, how many of you, is your first Sussex County meeting? Oh, so we have a lot of comments. Okay. We're pretty formal. This is the official committee plus one. We have a new committee member. The Division on Aging is for Persons with Disabilities is part of this committee. They're a non-voting member, and it was a natural kind of thing when this committee started, I believe, in 1988. The Division of Youth. There was back then. It was 20 years ago. The Division on Aging and the county joined together to found this committee. And I'd like to introduce Jill real quick. Okay, Jill. Jill has worked for the Department of Health and Social Services for over 18 years. During the last 14 years, she's been with the Division on Services for Aging and Adult and Physical Disabilities in many capacities. She is currently the administrator of the Aging and Disability Resource Center and the Delaware Money Management Program, which, not today, but maybe we can have you talk about another
okay.
time. And in addition, this is a nice little thing, nice big thing maybe, she's the executive director as a volunteer for the Chesapeake Feline Association in Maryland. So, thank you very much. For joining us. Okay. All right. Next on the agenda, we have the correspondence. I do have a correspondence. Oh, minutes first. You will receive the minutes from the September 16th meeting. And I'd like to have a motion to accept the minutes as written.
So move.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you, Gary. Okay, correspondence. I'll just do one thing, and then we'll introduce our speakers, okay? Okay. Unfortunately, Dennis Liebel isn't here. Dennis Liebel, who is the, I don't know if the Parkinson's has it. He's the executive director. Are they a formal Parkinson's group? Support groups. Yes, many support groups in Sussex County, and a very large membership. And he was very instrumental in our conference that we had. By the way, how many of you were at the conference? Great. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Okay. And in fact, he got Penny. You need another chair. Bob, Penny. You're still a member.
There's a chair right there.
There's a chair right here.
Yeah,
right.
Corner.
Yeah.
Penny, I can stay right here.
Together. Is it? Okay. I don't want you to feel excluded.
Okay, thank you. Sorry.
Okay. By the way, we are a group of 11. There are five councilmatic districts, two of us from each district, and a third from another district. But anyway, and we are appointed by a Sussex County person, you know, where we live. This is an appointed position for life. Unless the person moves out of the district, maybe even then we could go farther, leaves the committee for some reason, you can't move on, or the other reason that we're going to talk about today, since I'm 68 years old. Anyway, Dennis Liebel is a great guy. I wish he was here. I'd tell you more about how great he is. He got us $2,500 for our conference that we had, which I'll talk about later. He has an idea which he'd like our support. And the concept is called Aging in Place, a community forum. Does anybody else know about this, by the way?
Yes, I'm happy.
Yeah. Would you like to tell us about it?
It's going to be a three-hour presentation to the community. It may feel a little bit like a LIV conference in some degree, except it's a three-hour forum open to the public, free to the public, January the 23rd, 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. at the Cape and Logan High School Theater and Auditorium. Publicity is just starting to get underway for this, and there's a partnership for this with BB Medical Center, BB Healthcare now. So be looking for all of that coming, Kate Gazette, email, the blast will be coming out very soon, so you'll have very good notice to get ready for this event. We're going to be talking about the Affordable Care Act, but getting very, very specific in aging in place. Again, there will be exhibitors available, guest speakers. At this point, there are six. Maybe healthcare, and I may be forgetting, so help me, Sally, but BB Healthcare, Delaware Health and Social Services, Rita Landgraf.
The PACE program?
Yes, St. Francis PACE program, Christiana VNA, Griswold Home Care Service, Greater Lewis Village program. Is that five? Is that six?
Is this cheer? Status of participation? DB, St. Francis Hospital PACE program, Griswold?
These are the presenters.
The presenters, okay.
Six presenters. And then we'll be open time for exhibitors tables for question and answers.
There'll be kiosks with
exhibitors, they're calling it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's free?
Free to the public.
Free to the public. The date is?
January 23rd.
5:30
to
8:30. Now, if you're getting our emails from this committee, you'll be getting an email about this as soon as they get it from you.
Well, actually, there is a formal flyer that Dennis has been working on, and we're tweaking that. Actually, Carol Smith and I from the VNA, Carol Smith and I are kind of helping tweak that a little bit more. So be looking for that, and that might suit the committee very well, Sally, just to go with that flyer. It'll be a little letter. And.
But we can attach that to an email, right?
Yes,
okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. What Dennis would like us to do is to just sponsor, at least be one of the sponsors.
Yes, because you are volunteers, though.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I guess I need to have permission from the committee to to have our group be a sponsor. That just means that's that on the literature, it'll be a literature. And then we'll have to talk about whether or not we want to have a kiosk or not. I think it would be great, but we don't have a lot of materials, and there's not a lot to put out. So that's, we'll have to just think about that.
Do we need permission to sponsor?
Do you think we need permission to do this?
I would probably do a motion for it.
Do a motion? Mm-hmm. Do we need permission from the county council, do you think?
I'd run it by Todd.
Do it?
I would run it by Todd. I would make the motion. I would make the motion and then run it by Todd.
Okay. I'd like to have a motion to be a sponsor to the Aging in Place Community Forum, which will be held on January 23rd from 5:30 to 8:30.
One second.
Okay. Any,
who did that?
Opposed?
Who made the motion, Fran?
Fran? Fran made the motion.
Second.
Second was Scott.
Thank you.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. Maybe we should, since it's January 23rd, maybe I need to find out if the group would like to have kiosks there. I mean, I will be attending, but I would think some others might go. I don't mind being alone at the little kiosk, though, if I have to be on it, I will. But anybody else like to go with me to that evening? Think about it? Yeah? Okay, Scott.
I like with my...
Yeah, okay. So anyway, we'll do a little kiosk. Okay? Is that okay? You guys?
Yes.
I don't need a motion for that, do I?
No.
And we'll have to get the... let me work on that brochure. We do have a lot of the information on it. Okay, is that anything else on that, Christine?
That's it for now.
Next is, we have guest speakers. I'm going to turn it over to Anna Short, who is our secretary.
Today we're very lucky to have two beings with us who are going to explain Delaware's state plan on Alzheimer's. And please join me in welcoming Lisa Bond. She's the deputy director of the Delaware Division of Services for Aging Adults with Physical Disabilities, and Katie Mathen, who is the executive director of the Alzheimer's Association of Delaware.
Okay, thank you.
Katie's going to start.
All right. Well, good morning. Again, I'm Katie Mathen, and I'm the executive director of Delaware with the Alzheimer's Association Delaware Valley Chapter. And I'm very excited and honored to be here today to tell you all, share a little more information about our Delaware State plan to address Alzheimer's disease and related disorders. Can everyone hear me okay?
Yeah.
I'm usually a pretty loud speaker, but if you can't, just let me know. Just to set the background as to why we pursued developing a state plan on Alzheimer's disease, I'm going to provide you with some statistics around Alzheimer's, and then what sort of efforts are happening at the national level. And then Lisa's going to talk specifically to our state plan on Alzheimer's disease here in Delaware. So I'll start off with some statistics. We know at the Alzheimer's Association, we consider Alzheimer's disease to be the public health crisis of the 21st century. We know this from the numbers. It's estimated that 1 in 9 over the age of 65 and 1 in 3 over the age of 85 currently have Alzheimer's disease. Every 68 seconds, someone in our country develops Alzheimer's. We estimate right now there are more than 5 million Americans who currently have Alzheimer's disease. And if we don't find a cure, new treatments, or ways to prevent the disease, by mid-century, there will be more than 16 million Americans who have Alzheimer's. And here in the state of Delaware, the impact of Alzheimer's on our state is not to be underestimated. We estimate that there are more than 26,000 Delawareans who currently have Alzheimer's disease or a related disorder, and that number is only growing at an exponential rate. Given that a large percentage of our population here in Delaware is already in that 65 and over population cohort, and we know with Alzheimer's disease that age is the greatest risk factor. So we already have an aging population here in our state. Couple that with an influx of retirees, especially into Sussex County. And this is a disease that, again, currently has a significant impact on our state, and that impact is only going to grow in the coming years as our state population continues to age. and are within that age of greatest risk for developing Alzheimer's disease. We also know that now is the time to address Alzheimer's. Now is the time to develop a state plan based on the financial impact of the disease. So as the number of Americans and the number of Delawareans who are developing this disease increases, the cost of caring for this population is only expected to expand in lockstep. We also know that this is a disease that has a huge impact on families and friends and caregivers. This is a disease that exacts a significant financial, physical, emotional toll on the millions of families and friends who must provide exhaustive round-the-clock care to individuals with this disease. We consider Alzheimer's disease to be the ultimate thief, the thief of independence, the thief of memories, the thief of time, and unfortunately, ultimately, the thief of life. It robs spouses of lifetime companions and children of their grandparents and their parents. So again, we know that now is the time to address Alzheimer's. It's urgent. We must, as a state and as a nation, do all that we can to address this disease. So at the national level, back in 2011, recognizing the significant impact of this disease on our country, President Obama signed into law the National Alzheimer's Project Act, which called for the creation of a national strategic plan to address Alzheimer's disease at the national level. That plan was released in May of 2012, and then just this past May was updated. So that plan includes goals and recommendations for our country and what our country can do to best address Alzheimer's issues nationwide. So we're very excited about the fact that our country now has a national plan. For the first time ever in our country's history, we now have this national plan. But we saw that we needed to do more here at the local level, here in our state of Delaware. A number of states have already developed or were in the process or are currently in the process of developing their state plans on Alzheimer's disease. So seeing the significant impact that this disease has on our state, we approached the Division of Services for Aging and Adults with Physical Disabilities. We approached Bill Love and Lisa Bond, and we talked about what we can do to partner together to collaborate to best address Alzheimer's in a comprehensive, cost-effective way, how we can ensure that as a state, we are a dementia-capable state, and we're supporting the thousands of Delawareans who are impacted by this disease. So we had a meeting with Bill and with Lisa, and I'll let Lisa take it from here to talk about where we went after that meeting. But I have to say, we were so grateful at the Alzheimer's Association, so very grateful for the partnership and collaboration that we have with the state, and we certainly look forward to continuing to work together with them.
Good morning, everyone. Thanks for having me here this morning.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. I'm going to stand. So as Katie mentioned, I'm just going to talk to you a little bit about the Delaware State Plan to address Alzheimer's disease and related disorders. And so what I'm going to do is spend a little time about how we got to this point and what our next steps are. Okay. So as Katie mentioned, the Delaware Valley Chapter of the Alzheimer's Association contacted our division, Aging and Adults with Physical Disabilities, and really educated us about the national plan and the national initiatives, and helped us sort of look at what some other states were doing, what was happening nationally, and we got together and decided that we would have a plan here in Delaware. And so this truly represents a collaboration between the two agencies, but we also, in December, let's see, when did we start? Oh, in September of 2012, we established a task force. And the task force included caregivers, professionals, advocacy groups, for all across the state that we got together and said, hey, how are we going to do this? How are we going to create a plan that we can follow here in Delaware that will map out over the next several years how we're going to address this growing issue of Alzheimer's disease and related disorders? So that task force met for a couple of months, and then in December of 2012, we broke out into subgroups or work groups, if you will. And what the task force identified was five areas that we wanted to address and put in the plan, and this is very much on line with what was done at the national level as well, so we kind of used that as a basis for a target. So the work groups were caregiver supports, public awareness and outreach, improving service delivery, and improving and expanding home and community-based services for people with Alzheimer's, and then training and professional development. So those were kind of the five areas that we really looked at, and as you can imagine, when you break out and look at all those areas, there's also a lot of overlap in that. So what we did was we had these separate work groups. Then everybody came back with a list of
goals, objectives, and strategies to go into the plan. And then the task force took those, and we tried to make sure that they weren't redundant throughout the plan. So then we kind of decided where they went and under which goal or strategy they would be held accountable. So we did that. Then in June of 2013, we took out a draft plan, and we had three town hall meetings. We did one in each county. We also had people offer public comment through our, you know, our email and our website and that type of thing, and we gathered public comment over time. And then we got back together as a task force and took into account the comments we had received, made some changes to the plan, and then as of this month, we have what we're currently calling the completed draft of the state plan. Now, the reason it's still in draft, our last step that we need to do is we have a meeting coming up with our Cabinet Secretary of Health and Social Services, Rita Landgraf, and we're just going to go through this with her. And then at that point, when she approves it, it'll be, you know, the final plan. So this has gone back out to the task force, back out to everyone that was involved, and this is kind of what we're presenting as the completed plan. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to kind of go through with you what's included in the plan at a high level, and then what our next steps are related to the plan. The plan is broken into several sections. There's an introduction, then there's some information about the impact of Alzheimer's disease, a lot of what you heard from Katie this morning, just about statistics on how many people are affected by the disease and the dramatic impact that it has on families. The methodology is kind of what I went through, how we got here, how we went through the plan, how we included the public comment. And then the meat of the plan is really the goals, objectives, and strategies, and I'll get into that with you in just a minute. Then we also just included some appendices, a list of the task force members, a list of the work group members. We also included a glossary, because one of the things we found when we went out statewide is that sometimes different words have different meanings. So some people interpret when we were saying long-term care that that meant nursing home placement. Or to our division, that means all the services across the long-term care continuum. So what we did was we put a glossary in the back, and it's footnoted so that people can go, and when they say, well, what does that mean, they can go look and see exactly what we're talking about. We also included just a page of resources where people can contact for additional information. So that kind of makes up the plan. Now, again, like I said, the meat of the plan really goes through the goals that we talked about. And you'll see, if I can show you a little bit here from the format of the plan, that there's a goal, and the goal is very high level. So for example, goal one is promote public awareness of Alzheimer's disease. Okay. But then we also came up with some objectives that speak to how to meet the goal, and then some strategies that are more concrete around how to meet those particular objectives. And even when you read this, a lot of this is pretty broad, right? So that's what we'll get to in a minute. Well, how do you actually start to make this happen? But as you read through the goals, objectives, and strategies, for example, promote public awareness of Alzheimer's disease, the first objective is to build on existing public and private partnerships to support a comprehensive public education campaign using reliable, evidence-based Alzheimer's-related educational messages. And so then we come up with some strategies around how to do that. There's five strategies here on how to do that. And one example of a strategy is disseminate messages using a variety of forums, such as community events, health fairs, speaking engagements, public service announcements, and web-based social criteria. So one of the things that we really did in this plan is recognizing that it doesn't come with a whole lot of new funding, that we really have to leverage what we're all already out there doing. What we already know, what we all have access to, so that we get the most bang for our buck. So, for example, when you were talking about the event that's being planned by the Parkinson's group, you know, we can post that stuff on our website, and we can help because we already pay for some regular advertising. So we're always happy to work with our partners to get the word out. And then so similarly, we would expect people, hopefully, you know, put some of our information out there, you know, if they're going to an event or for sharing information on Alzheimer's. So a lot of it is about leveraging existing resources. Goal two is to improve the delivery of services to persons with Alzheimer's. And a lot of what this is on is that we have a lot of services already in place, but they're not necessarily what we call fully dementia capable. And so what happens is there's a service out there, and we go to link somebody in, but because of the way that the disease progresses, sometimes people can't take full advantage of those services.
And so one of the things we need to do is make existing services better, not just create, you know, all new services. Okay, so that's something that we looked at. The third goal of the plan is to strengthen the support of caregivers of persons with Alzheimer's disease. We certainly recognize that most of the caregiving is being done by families and friends and other people who support people. And so we really know that we have to improve the way that we support caregivers. Okay, so that'll be a big focus of this plan as well. And one of the strategies, for example, is to create a robust toolkit that we can share with caregivers containing practical tips, educational materials, and linked to educational programs. Okay, and again, we have a lot of ways out there to already do that with the Aging and Disability Resource Center and with our services guide. So if we can put better information in there, then we can get that out to caregivers and the general public. Okay. Goal four is to achieve an Alzheimer's competent workforce in the state of Delaware. So this is about lots and lots and lots of training for people out there who are on the ground providing services to people with Alzheimer's. So this is the CNAs that are going to go into a home to provide personal care. This is the staff of the division. We have case managers and nurses that go out into people's homes. And so what we want to do is make sure that they really have as much information as possible and as many resources as possible to provide good services to those individuals. Okay. Let's see here. And goal five, I lost my sticky note, bear with me for a second, okay, is to improve and expand Delaware's Alzheimer's and dementia-related infrastructure by supporting the creation of the Delaware Center for Alzheimer's and Related Dementias. And this really came out of our medical professionals and researchers that we had as a part of the task force. And one of the notes, and you can help me, Katie, here, is that a lot of the funding tends to go to the neighboring, the big cities. It's going to go to Philly and Washington and New York because they have a bigger infrastructure around centers for excellence related to Alzheimer's. And so one of the concepts here is that we need to build something similar in Delaware so that we can draw down more of these research grants and more of this federal funding. Now, one of the things specific to this initiative is we're not talking about building a big multi-million dollar building or anything. This can be like an online or a virtual center for excellence that we can leverage, like the Swank Memory Center and some of the other initiatives that are already underway in Delaware. And so this is a way that we want to make sure that our medical professionals in Delaware have access to absolutely the most current research and information, and then also can get some more grant money into the state. So those are the five goals, again, with the objectives and the strategies. And so where we are now around next steps is, again, we're going to get a final approval on this. And then what we're going to do in Delaware, and I believe only one other state has done this, and I think it was Oregon, we'll go with Oregon. What happens is we, the division, we have an existing what's called state plan on aging, okay? And that state plan is essentially our contract with the Administration on Aging. That's how we draw down our federal funding for our programs. And what we would like to do, because we think it gives it more weight and it demonstrates that in Delaware, these are just not words on a paper to us, that this is something that we truly intend to move these initiatives forward and commit to and work on, we are working with the Administration on Aging, and we're going to have this added to our state plan on aging as an appendices to that, okay? So what that does is it ties us into our federal state plan, and then we're more on the hook to getting this stuff done, so to speak. So when the Administration on Aging comes out to visit us yearly to see what we're doing in Delaware and making sure we're spending our federal money the way that we should be and making sure that we're advancing in certain areas, this will be included in that. So although it's not a requirement by the Administration on Aging or the Administration on Community Living, it is something that we want to do because, like I said, we do feel it adds that level of sort of accountability to it. And it also makes sure that if new people come into leadership, this is there for them. And so they got to stick with it, too. So it can't just be something that, you know, Katie and Bill and I wanted to do and Paul, you know, and then the next people come in. So it's built in and it becomes part of kind of the systemic change that we're trying to achieve in Delaware. So that's why we are doing that. So that will be the next steps, is to get it actually officially amended into part of our state plan.
And then what we're going to do is, because you ask, if you look through this, I mean, this is a pretty ambitious plan. It really is. And what we will do, and we'll get back together with the task force on this, but what we've talked about doing and what we do with our state plan on aging, and we think it's a good format to follow, is we go through and we create a timeline for each one of these strategies. Okay, so we'll take, say, a three-year period, and we'll go through and we'll designate by quarter. So like year one, quarter one, year two, quarter one, what we're going to work on. And some of them will be ongoing, because some of them will always be ongoing, because we always want to make home and community-based services more accessible. So I'm not sure when we've done that, per se, because if we get better, we just want to get more better. So what we'll do is we go through and we create a timeline that says when we're going to start an initiative, and then when we hope to accomplish that initiative, or if it's just something that's ongoing. And then what we also do is we assign a responsible party. So for some of this, you know, the division may be the lead on it, and for some of it, maybe the Alzheimer's Association will be the lead on it, and for some of it, maybe it's the doctors from Christiana Care or Swank Medical Center or other groups. And so what we'll do is we kind of identify a lead, and that doesn't mean they're solely responsible for the objective, but we call them the champions. They kind of champion a certain objective or a strategy, and they convene the task force or the work group or whatever we need to do to move it forward with whoever they need to pull in. So that's kind of what we see happening. And we'll also develop probably some performance measures. So part of that as well is, well, how do you know when you've accomplished a certain goal, or how do you know that you're on track over a three-year period to accomplishing a certain goal? So we include that in what we're kind of calling the implementation plan as well. And then what we'll continue to do, for example, right now we've just finished year one of our current state plan on aging, which runs through 2015, and we're working on what we're calling a state plan report card, so that we can then go and post that on our site so people can see, because we did the same thing. You know, we took the state plan, we go around, we get public comment, we show it off, and then everyone's like, yeah, but how do we know you're doing anything with that? And so what we'll do is we'll publish our year one report card where people can go in and see the performance measures and see what we've accomplished in year one on the state plan. So we anticipate doing something similarly with this, so that as we move forward, anyone who's interested can go in and kind of see where we are and how we're progressing. Okay. Does anyone have any questions for KBRI?
Is that online now?
You know what? I have to go back, because I came prepared to tell you it was on the website, and when I went out there this morning, I couldn't find it. And I think the reason is maybe the most current draft didn't get reposted. So I'll tell you this. It is on the website, and I'll make sure it gets out there. So how about that? We'll go with, as soon as I get back to the office, I'm going to say make sure it's out there. So I think what happened was is we had it up out there for public comment. Like I said, this is the fresh draft with the new comments. We probably need to repost it out there. So I feel pretty safe in saying that this will be the final. Again, Rita might have a thing or two that she wants us to tweak, but it certainly won't undergo any major, you know, significant changes. You're going to work with it. There we go. That's what it looks like. This is not good printer. This is, look, Katie has a better printer than I do. Purple. Some shade of purple, depending on your printer. So we will go ahead and make sure that that's out there. On our website, there's a section called Publications and Reports, so that's where you would find it. That's also where you'll find the state plan on aging, okay? And so at some point, this would move, because it would just be part of that state plan. And what we really did was we made sure it dovetailed nicely with the state plan, because if you go through the state plan, there's some similar goals in there, where maybe we didn't specifically say Alzheimer's, but, you know, it really applies to everyone. So for making access easier for people with Alzheimer's, it'll be easier for everyone.
Do you address prevention in
it? I think we do. Yes. So a lot of it around the promoting awareness of the disease is to start with that idea that we feel like everybody should know those 10 early signs of Alzheimer's. And I guess the example I always use is, whether you do or not, we all know that smoking is bad for you. Billboards, and it's been this constant public health messaging for a number of years. And so speaking to prevention to start with, we feel like everybody needs to know,
you know, how many people are affected by this disease and how many, I'm sorry, this is a difficult one. Show my back to someone no matter what I do. So we really need to get the word out there, and we really need people to first recognize the symptoms and understand the symptoms so they can then go get the early diagnosis to get treated as soon as possible. And I'm thinking, what else is in here around prevention? I know we have something. Hold on, let me check here. Public awareness.
We also talk about strengthening the partnership and relationship with the Division of Public Health,
right,
and what we can do more with the Division of Public Health to get the word out there about early detection, diagnosis, and you know, ways to, you know, maybe keep your brain healthy as you age as well. Mm-hmm. I'll be a part of that.
Yeah, my mother had Alzheimer's, and my biggest fear is, am I next? You know?
Right, so right. And so we do address a lot of that because we do really think it should be really common knowledge, just like people know, you know, that they shouldn't smoke. Because that's been an example of, you know, when people are determined to get the message out there that it is something that you see all the time, the billboards and all that kind of information. So, Paul.
Two quick comments. One on that also, there's a focus on increasing education of primary care providers.
Right.
So that's not just to persons with advanced or moderate dementia or early stages, but also the caregivers who need to, you know, to focus some attention. But the other thing I just wanted to mention, being in one of the groups, is one specific strategy. There are 70, almost 70 strategies here, but one of them, it seemed to me, is very central to the work of this group, the advisory committee. And it's easy for me to remember because I went to elementary school number 223 in Baltimore, and it's strategy number 223. So I just kind of remember that. If I may, on that,
go ahead.
It says, identify Alzheimer's-related service and educational challenges faced in locations with large numbers of older individuals residing in rural areas, including access to emergency psychiatric care, and recommend targeted actions to effectively address these challenges. I think of this in some sense as the non-Wilmington strategy. Mm-hmm. It was kind of developed in its very early drafts as, instead of saying, you know, locations with large numbers of older individuals residing in rural areas, kind of the first cut used the term downstate. But basically, the idea here is really to ensure, and it's similar in terms of the national, or rather the Delaware State plan on aging, to really look at what's happening in rural areas and in areas where, you know, if you look at Sussex County, and I'm also a resident of Sussex County, it's got double the percentage of 65-year-olds plus as Newcastle, for example. Kent's closer. But this provides some focused attention in terms of those areas, and that really becomes central. And now with the recent report of Stockley and other situations, there's some real opportunities here, particularly with the inclusion of access to emergency psychiatric care that's really literally in this, which is now, if somebody almost in Maryland, Southern Delaware, needs some emergency psychiatric care in a facility that's beyond the capability of that facility, or someone at home. Recently, one of those facilities placed an individual in that difficult situation and called police. Police took the person to BB. BB in turn put the person in an ambulance up to Meadowlawn in Vernon. And so that's the kind of thing that particular strategy calls attention to and may very well be a key aspect of your advisory committee in terms of some partnership and work in that area. Sorry, Lisa.
No, that's great. Thank you.
Jean Burgess, who is the director of the Crisis Center in Allendale, and she said that they've seen a number of people who are bringing people with dementia or Alzheimer's crisis to them for assistance, and they don't, that's not what they deal with. And so they don't really know where they can send those people.
Right, and I think that was a lot of what was behind that strategy, is the acknowledgement that in Sussex County there currently is, there really isn't any place. And so that has to be.
When they were opening the crisis center in Ellendale, when I talked with Rita Langrath and Kevin Huckshorn both, and they both assured me they would be able to handle Alzheimer's patients. And then when I talked to the people at Ellendale, they were not educated to handle.
Okay.
So I did get set up a training that they did down there.
Okay.
But that's been the issue, that they were not equipped, not
right.
educated to
right.
handle. And that
right.
was one of the things that we were looking
to
make
advance,
sure.
right. Okay, great.
Question back there?
Looking at the issue further along, in the, beyond the crisis situation, does Delaware have a plan that will ease the caregiver for a longer block of time than just the crises? Because as people with dementia deteriorate, they can become much more physical, and the issue is much more complicated than just the caregiver themselves.
Right.
I mean, I've been told with friends that a husband has sort of continuously had to be hospitalized, but it's short blocks of time because
right.
Delaware no longer has a long-term place for people who need that type of care that can be physically challenging for both the caregiver and the
right.
person who is suffering from Alzheimer's. Is that being addressed?
Yes, and one of the things when we talked about, again, improving existing services, because we definitely, and if you look throughout the plan, we've talked about doing a really good caregiver assessment, but not, I think what happens now is someone's maybe diagnosed and then there's some kind of caregiver assessment. And that's very different that year than maybe the next year or maybe 18 months later or 2 years later. And so one of the things we really want to look into and figure out is what happens over the life of that disease and as it progresses, because what we find is we can get in there and we can support caregivers and it goes for a period of time, right? Things are kind of manageable and they do okay. And then maybe there's a crisis, or maybe there's not a crisis. Maybe it's just a slow but steady decline. And then caregivers get to a point where either they get sick physically, or they just can't do it anymore, and they look into institutionalization or that kind of thing. And what we just want to do is find out, is there a way that we could have supported them more heavily for a longer period of time as a caregiver? And so that's where we hope those assessments will come in. And I said I'd almost be interested in talking with caregivers, and hopefully it'll be part of it, who have gone through a period of time in caring for a loved one at home and then gotten to a point and then went with like the nursing home route. Because that's where you say, well, what happened? You know what I mean? Because 1 month it was okay, and then the next month it was like that was the breaking point. So we're interested in learning more about what the breaking point is, and then if there's anything we could do at that point to extend it. So that's one thing we're looking at. And then when we talk about having home and community-based services, I'll use this as an example because this is the one that I've tried to navigate through people personally, is that you get someone and let's say they come through us and they go through the ADRC and they have a case manager and we get them into an adult day program, okay? And they're in that adult day program for a period of time and it's a big help to the caregiver. Maybe they are living with adult children who have to work or maybe they're living with a spouse who can't manage them, you know, 24/7. And so they go into an adult day program, and it helps for a period of time, and then they have disruptive behaviors, and then the adult day says, we can't keep them here. So then if the adult day, with all that staff, can't keep them there, then how is the caregiver in the home, you know, by themselves supposed to manage? So we also want to do that assessment with providers. So these providers who are already in there, and they're managing services, but then there's a crisis to say, well, what happens? How come, you know what I mean, this person's been coming for a year, you know them well, you've been serving them for a year, what happened that all of a sudden you're calling us saying we're terminating services? And so what happened there, and how do we shore them up or work with them on training to make sure that they can extend the period of time that they can serve someone?
But are you recognizing then the progression of the disease?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Lisa, is there a respite type program in there for the caregivers?
Yes. And really, again, we're looking at taking the existing respite and making it more self-directed. Sorry, someone back here has been patiently waiting.
Yeah, getting back to this idea of
prevention or slowing down of the process. I read recently a couple of things about statins of blood pressure medication, or cholesterol medications, and then blood pressure medications, and that those things are not going to reverse it, but that they can slow down the process.
Well, yeah, I mean, certainly for us at the Alzheimer's Association, research is a big part of what we do. It's the first part of our mission is to eliminate Alzheimer's disease through advancing research. So research into prevention, research into new treatments, research ultimately into a cure. So there's a lot of research going on right now around what can be done to prevent the disease or slow down the progression. Because Alzheimer's is the sixth leading cause of death in our country. It's the only cause of death in the top 10 without an identified way to cure, prevent, or even slow its progression. So right now, there's no identifiable, definitive ways in which we can slow the progression of Alzheimer's disease. There's medications that are approved by the FDA to help with some of the symptoms, but nothing yet has been identified to definitely slow the progression, stop the progression, or cure the disease. But I have seen that as well, that there is some research out there right now around blood pressure medications, statins, that shows that it could potentially be used to slow the progression, but nothing definitive out there as of yet. But again, you know, prevention treatments is a big focus of research, but nothing yet has been definitively identified. But we also know with Alzheimer's disease and related disorders, dementias, that there's a big connection between heart health and brain health. So what you do to protect your heart also protects your brain. And your brain depends on strong blood flow from the heart to work well. So you know, if you do something that is potentially damaging to the heart or your blood vessels, that can have a damaging effect on your brain as well. But definitely stay tuned because there's a lot of exciting, hopeful things happening with research right now. And Jamie, I don't know if you have anything to add to that you've heard.
No. And like you said, there is a lot of research. The only thing is there's nothing definitive. It doesn't. And to be considered scientific evidence, it has to, the studies have to be replicated and they have to come out with the same results. So what's happened is they do these studies and they get one result and then they do it again and the result is a little bit altered. And so it's not considered definitive until they can replicate it and get the same results.
I have a question or a comment. Or both. I have a 93-year-old cousin with dementia, and I just wanted to throw some caution out there to folks because when he has been hospitalized, he was hospitalized once, and they called it observation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I didn't know observation. Insurance will not pay. Medicare will not pay for observation.
Right.
We had a $14,000 two-day stay with absolutely nothing. And what it turned out to be is that he had taken, well, we didn't know Benadryl for children has a problem with people over 85.
Never.
Never. Doesn't say it anywhere on the, doesn't say it anywhere, anywhere, even on the website at that time. Anyway, since then, I smartened up, and when he went back in, I made sure that the diagnosis was something that was billable. Now, you know, educated consumer after spending $14,000, of course.
Right.
But I've seen some articles in AARP about observation. But when you're under, I mean, you know, I have this acting out wonderful man who never did that before.
Right.
I'm sitting in an emergency room. They say, they use the word, we're going to admit him. To me, admit means admit.
Yeah,
him.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean observation.
No.
And I think in terms of getting the word out, I don't know how people can do that, make sure that the doctors should know this. But I maybe I zoned out or something. There is no, I think the plan is sounds wonderful. There is no extra funding. We're just going to redistribute and educate.
Yeah, I mean, right now there's no funding that comes with this plan. So.
And who will be admitted, when you say call us, are you talking about the DARC? I mean, who does a person, I think you mentioned that a couple times, where they'd have to call us or somebody could call us. Who's the us?
Well, I would say it would be, it's definitely collaboration, but at the division we have more of an infrastructure to kind of handle and police and monitor, you know, the progress. And, yeah, and if people need services, we're certainly, I can give you the 1-800 number if we do that.
But that 1-800 number goes to?
Yep,
So everything still will be funneled through.
Through the ADRC, yep.
But there'll be more education to the people that are getting those calls about things.
Right.
And if you have questions in the middle of the night or on holidays or weekends, the Alzheimer's Association has an 800 number that there is a trained person answers 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, never closes.
Right. And we, and our ADRC, so this is just an example, our ADRC has 24/7 to a call center. But you're not going to get an expert in Alzheimer's disease if you call 1-800 number because it's actually a group in Louisiana. So they answer the phone, but they're not. So, but we should be able to pass you through to their number. Do you know what I mean? So that's an example of leveraging. I don't need to recreate and pay for someone 24/7 Alzheimer's specialist because they got that covered. I just need to make sure that my folks, if you call, you don't care what 1-800 number you call it at 2 o'clock in the morning, right? Like, you don't care. You just know, like, I dialed and I got someone. So it's my group, or I'm transferring you over to her group, saying, hold on the line, I'm transferring you to someone that can help you. You know what I mean? You don't really care at 2 o'clock in the morning that you're not really talking to the ADRC, you're talking to someone from the, like, you don't care. You know what I mean? You just want someone that can help you. And so that's the idea of how we would work together, because we're all strong. Like, across the Aging and Disability Network, we're all strong in different areas. Right, like we all have things that are funded, we all have things that we're really good at, and then areas where we need some help. And so the whole idea is that, you know, if you come in through one point, you know, and by the same token, if you call that 1-800 number, they should be able to say to you, like, okay, this is da-da-da, but you know what, tomorrow morning call Division of Aging because you need to get someone out there to talk about services, you know, for ongoing. And so it should go the other way, you know, as well. And so that's where a lot of it is leveraging and making sure we all know what all these other different wonderful groups, you know, are doing.
But we're still going to rely on the people that are out there already to give that help and assistance.
Yes. And so if I could just, I saw you, but so one example is, one of the strategies we have is that to have a couple people, like a nurse and case manager on the division staff, who we train to be experts in Alzheimer's and dementia. And then, first of all, they're going to be a resource to my other folks. So my other case managers and nurses who go out into home or get a call and say, oh, this situation's boiling up, someone that they can talk to internally. But originally, I believe the strategy was written so that it just applied to us. And then one of the things that we said was, no, like, let's open that to everybody. So then in theory, if there's, say, an adult day center out there who's having trouble with someone, they should be able to call in and say, I really need to speak with someone who knows about this. Or we may decide it's better that it loops through to you guys. You know what I mean? However that works out. But people need to know that there's someone that they can call, you know, when there's something going on. So they need a little more help, a little more expertise.
Oh, sorry. I just want to make a comment. I'm really, really excited about this state plan. And I'm a dementia specialist and the elder care consultant. And so for me, education and awareness and general practitioners really need to be educated, because I'm very concerned about some of the testing that they are not doing, and making a diagnosis of Alzheimer's or related dementia, and it becomes a wastebasket diagnosis. So there's an amazing tool out now called the BCAT, and it's a great screening tool, and that's one of the things that I'm attempting to bring to Delaware, because it's very, very important, and it's a very accurate testing tool. The other thing that I would like to say is that I totally agree that the awareness level has to be raised in so many areas across the board. I mean, rural is definitely a great concern, and you know, people just are still afraid of the diagnoses, and they don't want to accept anything wrong. There's still a stigmatism around that. And I think that the more we can lessen the anxiety around that, and the more education that we can provide to so many different groups, I think is key. So I applaud the plan.
I only have one other concern, and some of you have heard me say this before. One of the issues, too, especially in Sussex County, is we have a lot of individuals who are still living alone but have a diagnosis. And we had one instance, the state police were called in, and there was no place to take this person. What happened was the families lived 8 to 10 hours away, so they had hired a live-in caregiver. The live-in caregiver went to bed and didn't wake up. And the gentleman, apparently the neighbors noticed that there was no activity over at the house for several days. So they ended up calling the police to come and check. The guy entered the door, the police went in, and they asked where the caregiver was. He said, oh, she's taking a nap, and didn't even recognize that she had died. And so he had been opening cans, and that's the food he'd been eating and things like that. But because he wasn't angry, or because he wasn't acting out, and because there was no evidence that anything was wrong with him, there was nobody in the middle of the night, his family 8 to 10 hours away, there was no place to take him and no family. And so we have no emergency. I mean, for Child Protective Services, we have a foster care, foster system. They're calling in the middle of the night. They can move a child out of a home in the middle of the night. We don't have anything like that for adults who are in the same situation.
And I think there's, and what we call that, although given that circumstance, it's sort of a...
It's a borderline, and it doesn't
strange way to put it. But one of the things that we recognize, and we have tried before, by the way, but we haven't been too successful, is that there needs to be an emergency respite situation.
At least
because we have certainly have had experiences, and Joe can attest to, where the caregiver has a heart attack, or there's some other situation where all of a sudden, you know, things are not okay. That person can't stay home alone. So there are specific strategies in here as well to address just that issue, that there needs to be a place, a way to either get someone else in that home or to put someone somewhere that isn't necessarily a nursing home for a few days or a couple of weeks until we can get in there and figure out, like, get with the family to say, okay, now what? You know what I mean? What are we going to do? And so we need to be able to do that. We need to be able to do it fast for that exact type of situation. So, but that is, you'll see there's some stuff on emergency respite in here.
Any other questions? Questions, comments?
Well, I guess just a comment, kind of dovetailing. I'm kind of living in this world. I'm sort of a retired nurse, but everybody in my neighborhood, which is Seniorville, and I'm the youngest one there. So when they find out that you're a nurse and you're around, and what I know is that regular folks who are not healthcare people, and I think I've kind of been in this pause, as my colleague says, this incubator mode to say, what does the regular world, when you're not a professional healthcare professional, what, how do they think? And like you say, the easy way to get information is either their church or the American Legions are just, I mean, the people who need us the most are just hanging out. They're not, and you nailed it. I mean, they're just so embarrassed. I get the whisper. I go to the Legion 2 times a week, and I feel like I've gone to the clinic, you know, because I just was like, could I talk to you? I think it's my husband. You know, so again, I think we've got to be just hanging out there, sitting out there. I have 5 neighbors in my neighborhood right now, and I'm their first responder call, and I can only go into the garage. They're so embarrassed by what their Alzheimer's dementia loved one is doing, and who they were, and what it's evolved to, you know, to, like you said, get beyond the embarrassment of it to even get to the next steps. And I think the regular world still thinks of a call to any health and human service. And again, I'm a child from the 60s, but we were raised, that's for really poor people, you know. And there's so many stigmas we have to change, because they think, well, I have money, you know, I have money, but it's the resources and the time to, you know, they don't even, they're afraid to call, or they don't even know that to, in my world, everybody would think they're baby boomers, and they have financial means, not a lot, but... Right. To call you would be, well, that's what the poor people call the state agency. So even that fundamental shift of, you know, this is the Alzheimer's resource number. I'm thinking every neighborhood association. I live in Lewis, the Villages Project, you know, the 800 number for the Alzheimer's needs to be in every printing phone book. Anything that's printed, every neighborhood directory that, you know, 911, and then here's the next phone number to call for that. So I think even that very simplistic no-cost action, you know, even this council could say, please phone directory, deprint us, you know, can we get to the front page of the emergency phone number?
And at the Alzheimer's Association, we have created a resource guide for people who have dementia. With a lot of phone numbers.
And I always ask that question. I say, have you called, like, the number? I carry the brochures around and pass them out. Oh, no, I haven't really, you know, like you were saying. Oh, no, not yet, not yet. You know, they'll talk to me, you know, just because I'm standing there having a glass of wine with them. So there's another level. It's just fascinating what if you're not in health, you know,
right.
I've spent my life calling them numbers, but if you're not a health person, I met my new buddy here, and I decided the golfers, you know, they, because how many, and again, no offense, gentlemen in the room, but the guys who are dealing with the, with their wife, if you think they're going to reach out and ask anybody, not going to happen. My husband, everybody comes home and said, I said that you would call my buddy, you know, that they'll call me because they're not going to. They're not going to come. So I think it's as fundamental as that. And like I said, meet the golfers who are saying there's something going on with my wife, you know.
And I would say that we see that as well because we have a service called Options Counseling. If you call the ADRC, it's not associated with, we don't care how much money you have. Because
right.
even if you have a ton of money and you're going to private pay for services, you don't necessarily know what services are out there or how to
exactly.
access them or
right.
how to contact the providers. So we say to people, you know, call us, and an options counselor can help, like, you navigate through that system. And for some people, maybe it does go to government benefits, but for other people, it doesn't. And we're not getting that population that calls either.
Right.
And so even though we're very committed and we're really trying to grow this options counseling, we find that when people call us, it is the, like, I need this, it's a crisis, this
right.
is, you know, we're not getting, we're trying to encourage people to plan ahead. And to know the long-term care system. And again, you know, even if you can private pay, even if it's just for a time or even if it's for part of it, that you don't necessarily know
right.
what to private pay for,
right?
You know, or
yeah.
what's an appropriate service. And so I would echo that. We also have the same, although we're trying some. And so that's where you guys could help us with the marketing and targeting that population, because I do think it's true that we're the government, you know, so we...
It's fascinating.
You know, some people just shut us
oh,
right
I,
down
I
versus
right.
if they hear it from their neighbors and their friends
yeah.
and stuff.
It's almost like saying we need meetings called emergency preparedness for aging.
Yes, yes.
Mm. yes. Okay, because
yeah.
if we call it that, it's safe.
Yes.
Whereas if we
right.
call it...
Well, and I always say, you know, people plan for their retirement financially.
Mm-hmm.
All the time. And nobody, you know, I don't even want to do it myself. I don't want to think about, like, oh, yeah, but what happens if I... I'm in a wheelchair someday. Am I going to be able to get in my front door? I mean, nobody really wants to have those conversations, you know, but, you know, it's the reality. And so it's that whole getting people to think of, you know, planning ahead.
Care plan.
Care plan.
Care.
And I am going to go back to the from diagnosis to the end.
Yep.
And JP gave me a nod. My husband was diagnosed 10 years ago with
okay.
FTD at Mayo. And I will always thank Mayo for saying, get it done now.
Right.
Start to finish.
Right.
So right now, well, I'm as the stages go, I'm basically, I interviewed all doctors that might be involved. Okay?
Right, right.
So what I'm doing is picking up the phone and saying, okay, it's time.
Right.
Okay. But that was only because of all the work that came
right.
in the beginning to say, this
right.
is what's going to happen at each stage.
Right.
This is wonderful that he was diagnosed early.
Right.
However, not going to stay that way.
Right.
And then how am I going to, you know. So, and we met with family
right.
to go over.
Yes. And one of the things highlighting the plan, too, is that you want to work with people that are diagnosed while they can still have a say in how they want things handled. And, you know, if you get all the legal and financial and stuff in order, that they're more empowered to make those decisions, you know, for themselves.
And
so that's
you,
in here, too.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I will tell you, my family has said, I just recently have been saying, as it's progressing, you don't know what a gift this is to us. This has been a gift
right.
to be able to have everything in place.
Even though I'm sure at the time it was an awful
yeah. oh, well.
Comp to think about
well, we had our
talk about.
And
yeah,
yeah.
yeah.
We had our kids denying it. And
yes, yes.
The numbers in Sussex County are particularly frightening. If you look at the demographics in Sussex County, within the next 5 to 10 years, Sussex County, Delaware, is supposed to have more people age 85 and older
mm-hmm.
than any county in the United States
mm-hmm.
per capita. It's per capita. Now, your statistics, 1 in 3 age 80 had Alzheimer's. Well, where's that leave sign? And what are you all going to do to help put a little asterisk next to Sussex
yeah.
County in the plan? Because we're going to need a lot of help. Very, very frightening. Very frightening. And by the way, Jamie, that was my client.
Okay, we have time for another quick question. Anybody comment?
There's a legal hurdle here, though, that because I went through this with my mother. If there is not a power of attorney
mm-hmm.
or a guardianship, and somebody's living alone, and they say, "I'm just fine, leave me alone, I don't want to move." You're stuck.
Yep.
You are stuck.
Go ahead. I am an attorney, and my practice is in Seaford, and something that Michelle and I both try really, really hard to do is get out and reduce free speaking engagements. I'm with Christina Wells in Seaford. I'm Amber Woodland, and Michelle Christina Wells is the owner of the firm. We're two women. We have 9 staff. So we're a 2-attorney firm, and we're keeping 9 other women busy. It's because people need to do the planning, and powers of attorney are critical, because if a person doesn't sign a power of attorney when they're helping and when they're able, or powers of attorney can even be signed when that early dementia diagnosis has been made. But as long as they can sign a power of attorney and they can understand the contents of the document, it avoids that last minute panic that ensues when a decision has to be made or Medicaid benefits have to be applied for, and then the only other option is to go get a guardianship through the court system.
And that's a hurdle.
And it's an extreme hurdle. And so you're relying on the court's timetables. You're relying on a judge's discretion as to what planning can actually be done, because in order to do any type of asset protection or long-term care planning under a guardianship order, you're under the court's discretion. So if the court says not a good idea, you're not able to do it. Anybody over the age of 18 should have a power of attorney and should plan in advance. And that's something that we try really, really hard to get that word out from a legal perspective of people battling dementia and Alzheimer's diagnoses, is that you've got to have the power of attorney and the advanced health care directive in place. And then if you can add to that a last will and testament, fabulous. That's the foundation. Everybody needs that foundation. Then there's additional planning that can be done on top of that. And we recognize the statistics in Sussex and realize, you know, we do everything from actual drafting of documents, but we do applications and interviews, Medicaid applications and interviews for clients. And getting the word out there about veterans benefits. I mean, there is just so much information that I'm from Seaford, Michelle's from Laurel, we're local girls, and we are extremely passionate about getting this word out to people in our community that need it. Because most of the time you see the healthcare providers.
Right.
You see the healthcare providers who are out there working together to try to get the word out, but then there's this legal component too that oftentimes get missed or isn't thought about until the last minute. So
yeah. And then the my mother's physician, who knew what was going on,
yes,
would not talk to me,
yes,
because I did not have any authority.
Right.
Her husband had died.
Right.
I'm the only child.
Yes.
And
yes.
So I wrote the doctor and said, please, 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 can I get your help? And he said, I can't talk to you because...
Yeah. And that's the thing, is there's too much bad information out there and too many misconceptions when it comes to the legal authority. And that's what we try to get out there and debunk these misconceptions.
Well, this wasn't a misconception. And I understood why he was obligated not to talk to me.
Yeah.
But you know, you're in a legal... morass.
Yeah. Well, that's what misconception. I mean, you know, a lot of times husband and wives, they think that under the law they have the ability to make every decision for their spouse because they're spouses. They're one legal unit, husband and wife, where they're treated as units. Oldest children have that same misconception. They think because I'm the oldest child, I just by default have these decision-making powers. And with husband and wives and with children, it's not true. Unless you have the legal documents in place, you have physicians, Medicaid office, the Department of Veterans Affairs, I mean, the banks, they won't talk to you.
I just lived through that. I had 2 parents. One, my mom had type 2 diabetes and she ended up with Alzheimer's disease. My dad had an inoperable brain tumor. They had nothing in place. They both died this past year. I have a 20-year background as a dementia specialist. You would think that I would be able to deal with this and convince them and all this other stuff. That didn't happen, okay? They had nothing in place. I had to get emergency guardianship. I had to have my parents removed from their home. That was the hardest thing I could have ever done in my life as a child, as a daughter. And so I understand what you're saying. I got no support from the physicians. They both had to get hospitalized in order for me to have them certified as incompetent. So I went before the court unrepresented, and I got emergency guardianship, which is unheard of, because the judge said to me, you know, Dr. McKenzie, nobody comes in front of me without representation. And I said, I'm not just anybody. But by the grace of God, that happened for me. But this point so well taken that people really, really have to understand the importance and not leave behind that big open loop of not being prepared from a legal standpoint in order to have these things in place.
And it boils down to the awareness. I mean, that's all it is. It's the awareness in getting the right people out, the right information, because you don't know how many times I hear, well, my neighbor told me this, or my friend told me this, or the facility that my husband is living in told me this, and everybody has the best intentions, but 9 times out of 10, it's bad information. And so not only is awareness important, but getting the right information out there is extremely important. It's the content of those awareness programs that's going to make the difference.
Well, this certainly one last thing. Couple of things. The Alzheimer's Association has a program called Legal and Financial. Michelle Priscino, they work with us. They donate their time, answer questions, give $200 or more an hour opinions and advice for nothing at our programs. We're so fortunate to have them in our loop. They are on our speakers bureau. The misconception about the wife, husband, whatever, and the children comes from the law that says there are 5 surrogate decision makers in Delaware if the person has no power of attorney. The catch is the doctor has to say the person is not competent to make those decisions, and you don't find a lot of doctors that'll do that. And so the surrogate decision maker is only if you're recognized in the chart as the surrogate decision maker by the doctor who says this person is not competent to make their own decisions.
And those are the default rules that you have to fall back on if there's no legal document in place that's done when a person is incapacitated. And you know, even with guardianship, a doctor is involved to determine whether that person is in need of a guardian or not in need of a guardian. And so when a document can be done privately without a physician involved, that's a power of attorney. And I've seen it too many times. And just from, people think attorneys and they think, oh, I'm going to go spend thousands of dollars. That may be true, but, you know, just, I say this all the time because I think it hits home with people. We charge $250 for a power of attorney. We get a $5,000 retainer for a guardianship. So, you know, people need to be doing this good thorough power of attorney rather than waiting until crisis and not being able to sign this very inexpensive legal document and having to spend bukus of dollars to go through a court proceeding and then be very limited on what planning can be done. Yeah.
Because even in a guardianship, you know, they give you a budget that you can spend on the person.
Right.
And the person that I was guardian for was in a facility, and they raised their rates, which went above our budget. So we had to petition the court, go back to the court, petition the court, pay them, so that we could raise the budget so we could pay the bills. And then the son decided he wanted to sell his mother's car. It cost us $600 to go back to court to get permission to sell the car for $800.
Right.
I mean, you know, the guardianship is not really a good thing.
Well, this certainly has stirred up. And it certainly has stirred up the need for additional information on this topic. I mean, many topics, but I think, like I said, Anna, having you come back, you're Ashley, right?
Amber.
Have you all saw, we have a sign-in sheet here, and have the persons with, please make sure you sign in. Also, please put down, like this gal who's a dementia expert. I mean, this is the time maybe you could put that in parentheses, because when Sue makes up this, Sue Webb from the county, who does our minutes, she will also have for me all the information that you guys, and this way we can get back to you. Adam, maybe we could do a legal thing. I think we're booked to March. So we have March
May.
Open? May? March, April, May. Maybe we could do
we're
a
always
May.
Happy. I mean, truly, we were at an all-day conference Saturday. I mean, the word just has to get out to these people in our community. And I think the benefit of things like this is you've got a room full right here of passionate people about this. And so we've got to build on
that. And the hard thing is these things always happen when the family is going through the crisis. The crisis hits. I used to do some option counseling with you guys. The crisis hits, and then it's like, okay, where's the power of attorney? We're just, oh, we don't have it. Now the person, it's going to be hard to get that person to understand or to show they understand enough to get it done.
And the power of attorney, the old power of attorneys, when people wrote them back in the 50s,
right.
were just financial.
Right.
And they didn't say that they could put a person in a nursing home or whatever. And if they don't say it, it doesn't work.
And Delaware has different laws than Maryland.
Yes.
Yeah. Pennsylvania. So we had to do a lot of rewriting when we moved from Maryland to Delaware
mm-hmm.
with that group.
Well, when we have our in May, now maybe we can do something a little bit longer than the usual time we have
mm-hmm.
and maybe really do a lot of publicity about it and get some additional people who would want to get involved and so forth. So. I want to thank Lisa and Katie.
Thank you. Thanks
thank
for having
you.
Us. And you know what I'll do? I'll actually make sure that this gets emailed to Anna. Are you the correct person? So then you can have it on email.
Okay.
So we'll get it on the website, but I'll actually email it as well as an attachment.
All
and
of our names, by the way, are on
make sure it goes
directly
to everyone.
The County Council website. You
okay.
can get all of our names,
okay.
the districts we're in. You can click on the person's name, and an email will pop up. Not the actual address, but at least it will pop up. And you can email us and say, Adam, Sally, whomever, we need a copy. So
okay, I'll get this out then. And
cool.
that way it's on the website, but then you don't have to go clicking around for it. I'll send it right to you.
Okay, just I want to go on to the next item. I don't know if you guys want to stay. Basically, we're going to talk about the conference and the evaluations from the conference. And at that time, we'll talk about topics, perhaps, that people have mentioned that we should do. And then I don't know if we'll have, I don't think we'll have time for the other. We have one more item.
Yeah.
Or do you think we should go?
I'm sorry, everyone. I have another
okay.
meeting.
Right. Okay. Okay. Tell you what. Maybe what we should do is I'm going to take my different privilege and I'm going to go down to public comment for a minute because I don't want to lose anybody. Usually at this time people will. We've had a lot of public comments so far about the topic and so forth, but is there anybody here who would like to mention something about themselves, the organization, in regard to information that would be good for this committee to hear, other people in the audience to hear? Anybody? Because in case I lose anybody, I want to make sure they feel that they got to say what they'd like to say, if they haven't said it. Good. All right. Okay. I'd like to turn up to Ruth Ann, our vice president, and she also volunteered. Actually, Ruth Ann did the evaluation for actual tool we used, and then she actually stepped up and wanted to. I don't know if she's so happy she did it, but she
it was very interesting.
Consolidated them. I think she said you got 144?
No, 136.
136 of the evaluations came through out of like 250, so I thought that was pretty good.
And out of the 136, we only had one person who said they would not attend another conference.
And that was me.
I really think that is fantastic.
It is.
And as I've been sitting here, listen to the conversation. Some of the suggestions are the very things that were talked about this morning. The legal aspect and the learning about different things. But anyway, I'm going to pass these out. I don't have enough for, I have plenty for the committee.
Yeah, that's one thing about this group. You never know how many are going to come.
Can I get one, Ruth?
And these two?
Together.
And we usually don't have them for the audience, too, and I apologize for that.
Oh, but, okay.
If any of you want to get this, just let me know. Give me a little note.
Two parts.
While we're handing out that to the committee,
got one for Penny.
I made a new list of committee members of our committee. It has Jill's information on it.
We did.
And look at it in case somebody's name is spelled wrong or email is wrong, especially, I hope you got yours right on this one. Petty, you want?
Francine's email. Has it been triggered?
I don't know. See what the kids made it on there.
Suzanne, I need one more copy.
You want one copy? Sure. God, I do have changes to mine.
Oh, great. I have to make an announcement. Fran Smith has taken a new position. She'll be the director of the Cheer
Georgetown Cheer Center.
Georgetown Cheer Center.
Oh, you're moving?
Starting Monday.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Okay.
I think this is pretty much, I hope, self-explanatory.
Is there any extras?
I knew you were going to say that. Patsy. I'm sorry, Patsy. Let's see, who was very instrumental? Christine was very instrumental as a volunteer at the conference. Christine Steele from Griswold. Hey, Patsy Bennett.
I've got one there, Christine.
Right, who else in the audience? Oh, Doris, of course, who just left. Lisa. How do you say your last name again, Lisa? Selling. Chelling.
There's no H.
Lewis Senior Center.
There's. I made a few extras.
Maybe we could give one to Liz.
One for table. I put my work number down here. I don't know if I can get facts. I'll let you know about that.
What I did, I went through and the very, and that's why you get two sections. The second part of it, I recap all of our evaluations, and I found it very interesting looking at the evaluations. Of course, it was from 1 to 10, with 10 being the highest. We had a small number of evaluations that were marked under 7. With the exception of, and this one did kind of surprise me because I didn't really find a lot of comments after they had marked it. The breaks, it was about 16.9%. Lunchtime was also higher. It was about 15. There were 21 people that under 7 for lunchtime and 23 for breaks.
Well, probably because the lunch was very crowded.
Well, in the suggestions or recommendations, and the time for questions was another one that was marked lower on in the 7s. But the rest of them were really very low, and it just shows how people felt about the conference and what they got out of it. And yet, it also shows how, if you want to put it this way, how hungry people are for information. I tried to break it down. I tried to make it break it down into the topic suggestions through following sort of our conference format, living healthy, and there's living active, living at home, And on the very, on the back, there is a section, just some other suggestions that I, that are things people were interested in, but they didn't exactly fit into that. But the legal concerns was one of the ones that I put in facing seniors, and that was mentioned, the power of attorney and wills, advanced directives, and estate planning. Support groups and types were mentioned. I mentioned actual training. I'm not going to go over the whole list. If there's something there that you wonder about, I'll try to get some more information. Medical information. They didn't mention Alzheimer's, but they mentioned strokes, heart attack, and autism. Prescription drugs. A lot of interest in learning more about the Affordable Care Act. And living active, there's a, and then living at home, there was, there's interest in several different areas there that will be some real opportunities to get information out. Now the second part of it were suggestions to improve in future conferences. And I tried to break this down into improving the conference and getting the word out. We had some comments on publicity and microphones and several different areas. There were a couple comments on registration and on the evaluation. Someone suggested that we add the age of attendees to it, and also add how the people heard about the conference. Then there are several suggestions about the facility. Then there's just the food. There are several things, and just one comment about parking. So I don't know if there's anything else that you want about this evaluation.
What I'd like to do is, we had a very large big group that worked on the conference very, very hard. And this meeting has never been the right venue to do any real nitty-gritty reflection or planning or whatever. So I would like to ask if we could have a meeting sometime in December, before the holidays, before we get too crazy with holidays, and not too long in. What do we need? A week? 2 weeks?
Yes. 1 week.
I have to publicize it.
Make it after December the 7th.
Right. After December the 7th. I'd like to have a meeting where we could really, really go through this, and we can start to plan. Does the committee think this is something we'd like to do on an annual basis?
I think that what was learned from this, that definitely when you have 135 people who say they're ready to come back to another conference.
Yes.
I was on Barbie with Delaware Hospice, and we attended as a vendor, and it was probably one of the most peaceful days that I've had in quite a while. And my job with Delaware Hospice is visiting physicians every day. As exciting as that sounds. I saw that you were having this, and I thought, this is our audience, because I'm sure all of us know that there's so many different conferences going on. You could be in 1,000 places any given time. We're a nonprofit, still the only nonprofit hospice, so we really have to watch how much we're paying for a conference. This one was very affordable. It was definitely our target audience. We came out with 4 hospice referrals and 3 transitions program referrals that day. I took 150 advanced healthcare directives with me because we get into that conversation. I went home with 40.
Wow.
I've never given that many out before. Because we work very closely with Priscino and Wells, and we're constantly promoting that. So I think it was wonderful. I'm excited to be there next year, and I will help spread the word any way that I can.
Wonderful.
You did a phenomenal job.
That's what we had hoped, that because I've been a vendor place this week, and we hope that there would be enough activity going on for the vendors that were there. We actually could have probably, if we had gotten our publicity out sooner, I mean, we had a cut off. Scott had to stop the website from vendors very early on, and certainly even participants, I'd say that almost a week before, and a lot of the publicity hadn't even hit yet. So we could have probably had at least a third to a half more participation by both vendors, and so we definitely have outgrown the cheer center. I mean, we outgrew for the first conference, not knowing what was happening. And of course, parking situation. Many people were upset about the parking situation. But there was nothing we could do about that. We didn't know what to expect.
Yes,
the first
question
time
about.
Yes.
The feedback is wonderful, and I'm just concerned when we have our breakout and we meet again to revisit the LIV conference and go over the evaluations. Like, I guess from the perspective of the amount of attendees that came to the conference versus the ratio of the amount of exhibitors or vendors that we had, did you feel like that was a good a number? We did not, in the end, I was so happy. The committee was very helpful, and they just said yes. We didn't have to really turn anyone away. We wanted to exhibit. We wanted to be a vendor for the event, which was something to be proud of. It was tight. I will tell you, I felt like it was a tight space, but boy, did you guys make the most of it. There was a little grumble about it. I didn't get an overwhelming amount of that negativity about the space. I just think there was more gratitude about the quality of information that was there. I mean, from Griswold's perspective, I have to tell you, I spoke with a variety of people. I met colleagues, I met more contacts, and people of interest who want to understand what we do better, too, with non-medical home care. So I felt it was a very successful from that standpoint, but just to see the camaraderie and the interest in the audience, and just the feedback that I could hear and feel, that you could see me, I'm 6 foot tall, it's not hard to miss me. I was kind of everywhere, and I was picking up on those vibes of just, there was a buzz about it, you know. And I was, hey, this is the first attempt, you know, this is amazing, you know. I have to say, I mean, really, the first attempt at that all-day event.
And when we were planning the event, originally, when we
So the ratio felt good with the number of vendors
yeah.
versus the...
Right.
Okay.
I thought so, too.
Okay.
I thought the ratio was good. I mean, you were there Saturday. There were a ton of vendors, and nowhere the ratio of participants to vendors, I think, was a little high.
Okay.
So I thought that the LIV conference, the ratio was a little better.
I mean, 27.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
For how many people that attended?
250 something.
Yeah. It was tight.
Well, we did have to say that Christine doesn't know how many people, how many vendors I did. I did turn away vendors.
Oh.
I did. And I did toward the end, like the last couple of days.
I'm sorry, I wasn't counting that. But there were like the last minute. And everybody professionally understands that.
Yeah.
2 days before
now,
the
event. Of course, WBSC said we turned away 100 people.
Yeah, I
did.
But Joe Buono told me that.
Oh, Randy. Randy's a marketing guy. I was hoping Randy would be. Randy,
he was supposed to come today.
Randy
helped
the guy who interviewed the hospital CEOs, which was, I felt.
He was great.
One of the best.
Yeah.
The best we had.
He was in his element lately.
Yeah. He did a really good job.
Well, can we pick a date to get together? Anybody who's interested in the conference and wants to participate in the planning of the next one?
They do.
I did have some feedback. I haven't seen a lot of this feedback, but on that day, a lot of people, some people, thought it was just a very long day.
Yep.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
yes, so much. It was just like almost a smorgasbord of things that we kind of thought, well, the first conference was a little of everything. I think the rollout of Obamacare around the same time, I think a lot of people thought we were going to do more on the Affordable Care Act, but now, knowing what's has happened, there wasn't a whole lot to do. I'm sorry.
We'll teach them how to navigate the website next time.
Yeah.
And a final bomb.
Yeah. Okay. What's a good? What do we have? Do we have a December date that would not interfere with people's plans?
Monday the 9th. Tuesday the 10th of December.
Second Tuesday. December 10th would be the second Tuesday.
Either one makes it good. What do you think, guys? Particularly the people who are very involved in the conference.
I won't be able to fundraise when I start the new job. I don't think they'd let me.
Unless they want you to be involved in the conference. Because now, Randy has left cheer, unfortunately. He's moved on. We don't know where he is now, but he's out there. And anybody who has anything for him, I highly recommend him. You know, whatever it is.
What day we decide on?
Do you want to do it on Tuesday or Monday?
Tuesday.
Tuesday? Good. Tuesday at? Tuesday, December 10th. How about from 10 till noon?
And where will this be?
What? Sue, think we could get the complex?
I can check.
Okay,
I'll have to check.
Going to check the complex. Let's just do this. We'll be at the West Complex on the usual place that we meet.
County Administration
Building on Route 113 next to the Imagery Bank.
West Complex
is called. At 10 o'clock. And we'll spend time on the conference. Can you come to that?
I know I can't.
You can't.
Could you do it on Monday?
Is Tuesday better for people?
After open enrollment closes, I'll make it any time.
Can you make a spike?
Yes, Tuesdays are always better than Mondays.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think Mondays. Listen, if you have a new job, Monday's not a good day. To be going somewhere except for the new job.
Well, I know. I'm very interested in the conference. And I don't think I'll have a problem with it.
Okay. Well, we'll focus on the conference, on the conference results, and where do we go from here? The next meeting, we can focus on the strategic plan. Okay. All right. Well, did everybody who's going to come to the meeting on the 9th get one of these?
The 10th.
Should we try to post that on the web?
The results? Can you send this all to me in an email? Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Can you send it to me and Scott?
Oh, sure.
All right,
this week.
We have to talk about getting it on the website.
Somewhere.
There's
one thing.
Okay. All right, where are we? We've got to postpone the strategic planning. I think we'll see what's going on with this. I had somebody who said, and I don't know, somebody told me to think of it or what, but our meetings, we always get a better turnout when you're a speaker. Okay? Well, what we could think about doing, at least two, maybe twice a year, is taking a topic that people really wanted more information on and making that the focus of that meeting. So, like we talked about a few, maybe the main meeting, focus on wills and power of attorneys and that kind of stuff.
One thing I wanted to mention real quick that I didn't say earlier is that
we welcome speaking to other professionals just as much as we welcome speaking to the public in general. So however you feel it's best to structure it, you know, a room full like this of other professionals and maybe the general public, or if you just want to gear it to professionals or you just want to gear it to the general public, we are open. And Michelle and I normally tag team everything, so it will be both of us.
And when you do speak, you speak in general about the topic.
Right.
Not necessarily promoting your firm.
Exactly.
Exactly.
We never promote. I mean, of course, if we get business out of it, that's
sure.
fabulous for our business.
Right.
But no, we never say, we
Good.
Just say, you need to use an elder law attorney. It can be any elder
yes.
law attorney, but make sure that you are choosing your attorney wisely and you're not choosing somebody that's just filling in blanks and forms on the side, but they really do personal injury or they really do divorce and child custody. Just make certain. Yeah, but we... No. I mean, our materials, if we bring any, of course, have our information on them, but we are not pushing just
I would like
us.
The group, like, the one of
Yeah,
friends.
Sure. I did. I ran out to the car. My box is still in there from Saturday. If you would like, I did grab some. I'll just give you maybe four of our general brochures, and here's some of my cards. And yeah, let us. We are always happy.
Do you have Dennis Liebel's phone number?
Yes.
I could let people have, because... anybody's interested in this, the 23rd of January, the event that we talked about, you can call Dennis Liebel. We'll give one each gentleman. I'm going to take Liebel. Okay.
I already have
Because I don't know what the cost is. Is there a cost for the kiosk?
Yes.
Yes, there is.
We are still looking at that right now.
Okay.
So, I mean, at this point, I have to go into my email to get this information.
Anyway, Dennis's phone number is?
I have to go into my email to get that. Because I left my folder on that on that form in the car.
I think I know.
His email is probably good.
I don't know. I thought he had it in here.
Lisa has his email.
Do you read E? I'll pull it up as a thing that'll tell me his phone number too.
Anybody else? Still waiting for the internet to hook up here?
His email is BLLEE. B-E-L at Verizon.net.
Did you say that again, Lisa?
Sure. B-L-L-E-E, B like boy, E-L at Verizon.net.
Okay.
He's good with email, too.
Mm-hmm. And it's called the Aging in Place Seminar or Forum?
Forum.
Yeah. .net, right? And he's going to be a speaker at our March meeting, I think, right?
Mm-hmm.
Dennis Liebel, Parkinson's?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. All right. And I also have copies of the schedule for the next couple months. We're going to be back at the Sussex County Administration Building.
That's my
conference. That's why I have so many. Anybody else need one? And next one's going to be on brain injury, silent epidemic, and that's going to be in the West Complex. I'll give you one of these. Yeah. And that's going to be January 27th, 10 a.m. And then Monday, March 17th, St. Patrick's Day, we're going to be at the Lewis Senior Center, hosted by
a leprechaun.
By a
leprechaun. Yes.
Yes.
We'll have green coffee and muffins.
Now, are there any, let's see, we have any other new business? And I don't have old business on here, but I guess I don't know why we don't put old business.
Just if you have some.
Business?
Yeah,
do you have the calls?
Two.
You have two? I have two different. You mean I have two different? with agendas? I have. Oh, we do have business. Already did have the old business and postponed the second part. New business. So, Jill, welcome.
Thank you.
To our famous committee on aging and adults with physical disabilities, because that's a challenge. And is there anybody here who would like to move to adjourn?
I'll move.
Oh, no, wait. I have to say one more thing. Doris, the executive director of this beautiful facility, is here to give us a tour.
If you'd like, yeah.
Please. It's such a beautiful facility. You can pick any room of your color. Right? She has a swatch. She's waiting for me. Just see. How many more of these do I need? I can come down. I got an email from Doris. She said something about come and see your new home. I misread it. It didn't say come and see. I don't know what it said, but I thought it said come and see your new home. Anything else? That's it. We're adjourned. Oh. Maybe I'll see you next a couple of months, or I'll see other people on December 10th at 5 o'clock.
I get to
and
clean it up.